Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 161 of the Nerd Cantina Show. And I am your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve, and we're going to recap a little bit of nerd news. We'll begin in entertainment, talking about the Snake Eyes movie, the upcoming San Diego Comic-Con, Warner Brothers plans for HBO Max exclusives in 2022. And then we'll move over into tech, where we'll discuss the latest hacking event with the Pegasus revelations. And then follow up on some stories we've previously talked about, like the Right to Repair, the Kaseya ransomware attack, Bezos going to space, and the Hubble telescope. A lot to get to. Let's get started.
Calling back all nerds. Nerds!
All right, and episode 161 here, and pretty good week in some overall news. We got some great topics to talk about, and you saw a movie, writing a review.
Yeah, this is the first time I've gone back to back weeks in a while. I was on a tear there for the first year or so of the Cantina, and COVID shut all that shit down. So it feels good to be going back regularly, even if it is to see a G.I. Joe movie.
I was saying, I think this review is one that like the Cantina needs.
Yeah.
Because nobody really is going to go see this movie.
Yeah, and it didn't go to streaming. You. It didn't go to Disney Plus. It didn't go to HBO Max. Like it went straight to theater, like an old school movie, you know?
So yeah, you can tell everybody whether it's worth braving the outdoors.
I've been struggling to write this one because it's really hard to kind of pin this down. I mean, so you go in expecting, right, you know,
it to be terrible, right?
Yeah, like, you go in expecting
that's the only
it to
expectation
be terrible.
You can have,
and really, you just are looking for like a Fast and Furious esque kind of storyline and whatnot. And honestly, for the story and it being a G.I. Joe movie, I would rank it above a Fast and Furious. Like it told actually a pretty decent story. Acting was pretty good. You know, it wasn't bad. Like they had their moments. You didn't see everything coming. You know what I mean? It wasn't just like so like drawn out and just kind of step by step to where you didn't really know where they were taking it the whole time. You kind of knew where it was going to end because you know these characters, from either the previous movies or basically my early childhood. And so you kind of saw it progress. The whole first hour of the movie feels like it's, you know, this, that it doesn't really have anything to do with G.I. Joe. And towards the second act, they start sprinkling in, you know, the Cobra, they start sprinkling in the Joes, and they don't do it so like in your face that
like cheesy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I thought
they don't do it like G.I. Joe.
Yeah. I thought they sprinkled that in really well. You know, the thing I hated most about it was the action scenes were very like jumbly iPhone shot. Like they hid all the bad kung fu choreography with just like that body cam kind of like motion where everything's just so shaky and you can't see it. And like, my fear is like in saying that I want to have some kung fu film expert come back at me and be like, well, you just don't know kung fu movies, bro. That's just how they shoot kung fu movies. And if you don't like that, you just don't like kung fu. And then I'm just like, well, then fuck you. I don't like kung fu. Like,
okay.
I don't know what to tell you. You know, like I felt like I was going to get a headache every time a fight scene kicked in, and they just, you know, it felt like it cheapened it because any really good kung fu scene, you have really tight shots because these people work on their choreography for months and months, and you want to see these moves and you want it to be realistic. And instead, it looked like, you know, some TikToker shot it in their fucking backyard with an iPhone. You know, so I just that really kind of took away a lot from the movie. But I like it's hard to tell people not to see it, and it's hard to tell people to go see it. Like I don't know. This is kind of one where I'm just like live your life, bro. Like don't really listen to me. Like If you had an itch to go see it, go see it. If you looked at it and said, "Nah, wait," then fucking wait. Like, I don't want to push anybody in any direction towards this movie or away from it. I really don't.
Yeah, if you got $15 burning in your pocket and 2 hours to spare, it's probably worth doing instead of going out to eat once again or something like that. Maybe.
Like I said, it had its ups, it had its downs. Overall, I didn't think it was a horrible movie. It beat my expectations. I still had a lot of shit I didn't enjoy about it, but at the end of the movie, I was like, that wasn't all that bad. If they make another one, I'll go see it. Because they left it open, and it looks like they're going to reboot the G.I. Joe universe. I don't think Tatum counts anymore. I mean, it could go either way. Like, honestly, like they didn't do it so that the Tatums wouldn't count, but at the same time, they could just ride off and do something different again. So I don't know. It's really, this one was a really tough one to kind of judge.
And this proves once again that, the key to happiness is expectation management.
It is.
Went in there with low expectations, you get to come out of it happy, at least somewhat satisfied, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you're the dude with like a snake eyes calf tattoo, you might be a little more mad than me.
About the tattoo, though, right? You're talking about that daily regret.
you might be a little bit more mad than I was. But like the chick who plays the Cobra chick, I think the Natasha, like she was great. I thought she was great. She was phenomenal as her character. They saw, man, do what you want, man. Like you can't go wrong.
All right. Well, let's get into some other, non-review news here, and we'll jump into, some San Diego Comic-Con news about the fact that, Marvel has announced joining DC in saying, no thanks, we're not going to participate in the virtual San Diego Comic-Con in November. This doesn't surprise me, although I'm waiting for them to announce when they're going to have their, Marvel Con or whatever they're going to do instead.
Well, Disney has their own expo every year, so I just don't understand why they even bother.
True. And then DC did the DC Fandome last year.
Fandome.
which was actually pretty decent. Like, I watched a few of those panels on DC Fandome with the kids, and they did a pretty decent job of having a little bit of talk
on Fandome last year.
It didn't bother me. And in fact, again, I'm not the kind of person who's going to brave going out to San Diego Comic-Con and deal with that and wait in lines to go to panels. So you let me actually watch the panel at home with my kids, not dealing with it. Like, no, I'm actually way more likely to enjoy Comic-Con then.
See, I'm total opposite, man. I go to C2E2 every year. I flew out to San Diego for San Diego Comic-Con. It's something that I'm really glad I got to do before the world killed cons. Man, sitting in that devs panel, being with a press pass and being able to be on the inside of that, like, I really enjoyed that. And I've tried to watch panels online, and it just, I don't know, it just doesn't have that feel. Like, if it's online, then there's no exclusivity. Like, there's no, just put it on fucking YouTube and let everybody go about their fucking day then. Being at the con, like, you got to put some effort into it. Like, if you want to be at the forefront of news and you wanted some special sneak peeks and shit like that, you got to get out of fucking bed and go trek through a bunch of dudes with BO and get to that goddamn panel. Like, sorry, you got to earn that shit. And I just think these virtual cons, like, it takes that away and makes guys like me that have been going through the trenches for fucking years for these things, just, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth, man.
Yeah. The only thing I'll be disappointed in is not seeing, like, people walking around with their croquis and all the weird stuff is, like, seeing the pictures afterwards of the good cosplay. But again, I'm not going to see it anyway. So all I ever get is recaps and YouTube recaps and articles of the best cosplay and stuff because I'm not showing up. So now at least I get to watch some of it live, see the full panels.
I mean, that's the thing is, guys like you, it's a plus. Guys like me, it's a fucking negative. Like, I just, you know, it, and cons have always been for the guys like me, right? You know, like it's they've always been for the people willing to put in the time and put down some fucking money. You know, because how does San Diego Comic-Con generate money then? You know what I mean? It's just all
they're selling ads at every panel.
Yeah, it's just all corporate sponsors and this and that. And, you know, these virtual cons, they take a lot of money out of struggling artists. A lot of these artists that barely get contracts, some of them are independent comic producers. This is where they get to show off their books. They get to show off their art. They get to sell their, 11x17s,
That's honestly who I feel worse for is like the Artist Alley people and stuff like that, where like they need this to sell things, to expand their brand, to get new fans, to connect with the fans that they have. Like they have limited opportunities to do so, and limited opportunities to sell although it's easier nowadays. Yeah,
there's some dude right now with a garage full of Funkos trying to reevaluate his whole life choices. C2E2 is still going on in December. I'm signing up for all of it again. I'm going to be there and do it. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited for it. You know, I'm not excited to do a con in the middle of fucking winter in Chicago. That's for goddamn sure. You know, all them cosplayers going to be hurting. There's going to be a lot of frostbitten butt cheeks in that motherfucker. I'm going to tell you that
you're just going to see it's going to be no sexy cosplay. It's going to be all like well padded Jabba the Hutt.
If working at a nightclub for 10 years has taught me anything, is that a woman will sacrifice her body for that outfit. I'm telling you that right now. I'm telling you that right now. That is a hardcore fact.
All right, then. Well, we'll see in December, hopefully, for C2E2. In November, San Diego Comic-Con, still going virtual. I haven't seen the dates for Fandome, but we'll talk about Disney Investor Day and Fandome as those come out as well. But let's move. Let's move over to a little bit of movie news. And we've got Warner Brothers making a statement this week about how they're going to be producing at least 10 movies that are exclusive for HBO Max in 2022. And that headline, they're not exclusive in the sense that they're all direct releases or going to only HBO Max, kind of like you expect for Netflix. Warner Brothers has committed to a 45-day theatrical window. Going into 2022, they said they will never go back. They said that they don't ever see things going back to like the 2015 to 2019 version of theater in these 90-100-day windows. They said 45 days is what they're going to commit to for the theaters, and then they're going to drop their 10 movies slotted only on HBO Max for viewership.
That's more than I was even, suggesting. I've always said from the beginning, just give it 3 weeks. If you ain't gone to the theater to see that movie in 3 weeks, you ain't fucking going. So just put it on fucking television, So they're going 45 days, which is even longer of a window, than I thought they would have to go. So I'm okay with that model. I'm really okay with that model. And I'm okay with even Warner Brothers making some exclusive movies that go straight to HBO Max. Like I don't think you're going to get movies like Dune that go straight to, HBO Max, but there's a lot of movies that don't really need a theatrical release. I mean, if Netflix has proven anything, it's that just some movies don't really deserve the car trip.
Yeah, I would agree that most movies don't deserve the car trip.
Yeah, we'll take that opinion with a grain of salt.
I think the 45-day window, I think it works. It'll get enough people to put their asses in theater seats because they don't want the movie spoiled for them. They're excited for it. They want to support their actors, their whatever else. The people who really want to go see those movies will go see it in the theater because they don't want to wait 45 days. And 45 days gives the casual viewers, a reason to, one, maintain their HBO Max subscription, which is really what AT&T and HBO, what they want. They want as many long-term subscribers as possible. That's how their stock price goes up. They're going to spread 10 movies out throughout the year. And honestly, I think it's a coin toss. Like they want to make a couple hundred million in the box office, but they also want to keep, however many million subscribers or increase their subscriber base just as much as they want to sell tickets.
I just find it odd that they're willing to go heavy into the movies when really HBO is known for their shows, right? Like if you just release some of your HBO TV shows for HBO Max. Like, do you really need to have exclusive movies? You know,
I think that the shows don't have that mass appeal. Like, you know, Game of Thrones had that mass appeal that everybody wanted to see it. But what else? What else recently, right? They can get back to like Sopranos days and stuff like that. But there isn't very much in the realm of HBO Max that is, you know, that has that broad audience that everybody needs
but
to see.
So if every average viewer has your mentality, you just subscribe for the 1 month, watch the movie, and then unsubscribe. To whereas if you put your money into quality television that they have been for the last fucking decade, you get those weekly viewers. You know, the TV series is going to span over 3 months, so you ain't canceling that subscription for 3 months. To whereas you subscribed for fucking Snyderverse and then unsubscribed right after.
You know, yes.
So is
the benefit. I also subscribed to watch Willy Wonka with my kids and then unsubscribed. So, you're always going to have cheap people like me. But that's why I think a 10-movie slate spread out, having 10, you know, hopefully, you know, blockbuster, decent movies coming out spread out throughout the year, as well as their TV shows. I think they've got a good model. I think it's going to work for them. Reducing the theatrical model makes sense in today's world. Nobody has patience to wait 100 days for your mediocre movie that didn't deserve the price at the box office. I'm fine with this new normal. Like, let's keep this going. Not a problem.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see how it goes. We'll definitely know soon.
All right, and let's move to, I think, our last entertainment topic here. We've got a little video gaming news, and this is such an interesting story here. So Amazon, has a new MMO, New World. It's come out. It's actually come out with pretty good reviews as far as the beta. There's a lot of people, you know, some people not liking it, but there's a lot there saying that it's like a groundbreaking MMO, really well-designed world that they think is, like, Amazon has been flopping in the video game world forever. They've never found any real success. They might have found their first real success here if they can get by the fact that they're burning out $2,000 GPUs as it hit the news that the RTX 3090s from NVIDIA were just burning up in the menu screen and, like, complete fail, destroyed the cards. We get GeForce, the GeForce cards are all being replaced by the company. So, you know, fear not. There are going to replace them all. They've identified the fact that it's their fault, faulty chips that didn't properly throttle back during, like, these weird loading screens, and it happened. There's some, like, random anecdotal, like, people talking about how, like, they had some AMD cards that also blew up or whatever else, that had problems. That hasn't been, like, widely discussed. Really, the whole focus is the fact that...
Well, because everybody's trying to get their hands on these 3090s. Yeah, you know what I mean?
They're incredibly difficult to get. People find a way to spend $2,000 on these chips only to have it burn out in a loading screen or a menu screen on a new Amazon game.
Is it really bad that I find this funny because I know these fucking PC elitist shit bags that ripped on every Xbox owner that ever got the red ring of death and said, that's why I go PC. That's why I go PC. Cause I don't trust these first gen consoles. They always fucking die.
Like, you are really holding that grudge. This is a 2005 grudge. I don't even know if that's right here. It's been a long time. But yeah, you are really gripping onto this. You were burnt hard by that red ring.
No, it's not even that. It's the fact that anytime somebody's happy about their console, you get some fucking dickbag to tell you how much better their PC is than it. Like, that's the thing. You know, that was just my old ass making a reference that first came to my old ass fucking brain. You know what I mean? Like, but it really boils down to the fact that anytime there's some happy console gamer out there, there's five fucking PC owners just waiting to shit on that dude. So, yeah, how's that fucking 3090 doing you now? Couldn't even get past the loading screen, douchebag, with your fucking $5,000 fucking PC. good way to fucking spend that money wisely. And that's really all it boils down to. And I don't even really hate PC gamers. Like, I've PC game. I ran a WoW guild for 3 fucking years. Like, I get it, man. But they're always such the biggest shit bags when it comes to anybody enjoying a fucking Switch or PS5 or something. They got to be the ones to tell you could just build one yourself and you'd have like all this stuff and blah blah blah. Yeah, and you could try a beta and have your computer fucking go up in smoke because you couldn't make it through the fucking load screen. Like, I'm sorry, I find that hilarious. I find it absolutely funny. And if you want to hate me for it, eat a dick. I don't care.
All right. Well, we've just wrapped up Steve's therapy session here on in the gaming segment. So if you're a PC gamer, you're mad. That's okay.
Well, even if you didn't get the loading screen and have your card burnt up, every card that they're shipping to replace is like what, 500 to 1,000 people waiting on their first card to finish their build. So it's just like affecting a whole chain of PC gamers right now.
Yeah, it's not a good situation for them. But I'm curious to hear more about this this New World game as it comes out. It seems actually pretty interesting. If I played video games, I would.
Yeah, everyone's going to boot it up with their eyes closed and pray.
But maybe Amazon has their first video game success. Maybe not. But let's move on out of entertainment and gaming. Let's talk a little bit about some tech. We've got a new tech story to lead everything out here, and it's our guy Edward Snowden talking about some encouraging trade bans. Spyware trade bans, so specifically trying to get the international bodies to agree to ban all commercial spyware following the Pegasus revelations that's been written about over the last week. To recap this Pegasus revelation, I don't think we talked about it last week. I think it was pretty new. Maybe we missed it in last week's show. The Pegasus revelation, like it's a pretty crazy. This NSO group has a spyware software, and they were contracted by many like actual government agencies, not the United States, but places like Mexico and I think Saudi Arabia and several other countries were known tied back to this NSO group. They were contracted by these countries to go then target specific numbers and specific people to attempt to load their NSO group spyware. That once it was loaded on the phones, gave complete access to location data, text message data, everything on these phones. So this is, a commercial company working on behalf of governments to just spy on whoever the hell they contracted them to do it. It's not like they needed warrants to be seen. It's not like they needed, like there was any kind of process. And this is where, Edward Snowden gets in and really wants to highlight the fact that this is incredibly dangerous. Like if you actually just don't think that this is a big deal, that, hey, good thing US wasn't a part of this, but you aren't concerned about like actual commercial companies being able to legally develop this software, legally share it share the links and download this malicious software into other phones on behalf of any government, then you might want to check your priorities. You really need to dig into this and just agree with the fact that this should probably just be outright banned. Like commercial organizations should not be able to legally go into other people's phones, pull their data, track their data on behalf of any government. I really don't care.
Well, there's going to be some Dudley fucking do-right out there that says, well, if you're not doing anything bad on your phone, what do you have to worry about?
Yeah, and an NSO group has come out and said that, they've helped the throat. They've helped these countries prevent crimes and terrorist attacks, and like their software worked and it did the purpose for the government.
It's the easiest way to excuse this shit is just say like we're stopping child trafficking. Because then if you argue with that, you're just fucking, you're a monster dickhead. Like, so we just say, we're going to tap the entire world's phone to stop child trafficking. And you just got to be like, okay, I guess I got to eat this one, huh?
Yeah, and it's... the article by The Guardian really talks about, and highlights some of the quotes from like Snowden. And Snowden's really like saying that, this is essentially like we're letting commercial companies legally operate in a way that like they're creating, the digital COVID is what he essentially like laid it out to be. Like they can create the digital COVID, create as many variants as they want, make it incredibly difficult for people to detect. But ultimately, like everybody's using two phones in the damn world, pretty much, like the iPhone and the Android. And so these commercial companies, all they need to do is hack two operating systems. And then they pretty much have every phone in the world at their fingertips to load the software to. But they can create as many versions of it as possible. So it's incredibly difficult to defeat and very easy for them to propagate. So this is the big concern.
I'm fully on board with what he's talking about and what you're saying right now. I just, like, man, this is the same dude that isn't allowed to live in his home country because of what he's been telling the world. You know what I mean? Like, this is the last person anybody involved with these programs is going to give a shit about, right? We need The Rock to worry about his phone privacy. That's the only way shit's going to get done. You know, fucking have Meghan Merkel, worried about cell phone privacy, and then maybe somebody in this fucking country will give a shit. But as long as it's like public enemy, social media public enemy number one, fucking Edward Snowden talking about, privacy on your cell phones and stuff, they're just like, you're going to listen to this guy? You can't even come home because he's such a snitch and a rat. No, don't trust this dude. And like, I just don't see anything coming from this. Like, he's completely right. This is something we should all be concerned about. We talk about these kinds of things all the fucking time on the show. And I just don't think anything is going to come of it when this is the only dude that gives a fuck. Because this dude saved this country from all kinds of government intrusion, and we rewarded him by making him a fucking villain. He's a goddamn digital martyr and fucking, you know what I mean? He's got to live in fucking Russia. Like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And I mean, there's other advocacy groups that are out there trying to get petitions, trying to talk about this on a national level.
Say it is, and there's other advocacy groups because we can't fucking name one.
Well, we've got Cory Doctorow's group, Boing Boing, has written about it.
Yeah, you're right.
He's written about it. They're actively, campaigning and lobbying for these same kind of thoughts as far as bans of any digital, like, authorized digital spyware. Like, we call it malicious software. Like, by its very name, we all agree to the fact that it's bad. The fact that we're letting commercial entities actually use it in the international stage legally.
No, and the analogy is completely true. They are creating the digital COVID, and we're just going to stand by and watch it and blame it on what, a digital bat? we're just gonna stand blindly by and let this shit go on. And when all our phones turn into just nasty spy devices and Big Brother just takes over, we're all just gonna look back on it and go, man, like, it looked like a cell phone mated with a fucking modem, and now we all got fucking cell phone AIDS.
Yeah. And it to get people really concerned, I just want to say, it was forensically like identified, and what that spyware was able to get access to, and it definitely had access to the microphone and camera. So all of you scrolling your phone sitting on the toilet, just know,
yeah,
if you don't want the government seeing you on the fucking can, give a shit about this.
Well, I think there's like a giant percentage of like 80% of people watch porn on their phones and not on the computer. So taking a shit is the least of their fucking problems. I'll tell you that right now. If all the government's got is me pooping, I feel pretty safe.
Yeah. I missed an opportunity to be way more gross. but I'm glad you didn't let the episode go by without talking about porn.
Man, it runs the world. I think that porn meme in the group is probably like the most circulated one going right now.
Yeah, it got pretty big there. So let's move on.
It's the glue that bonds the world together.
Yes. I don't know about all of the world, but at least as American men. let's go with an update to the Kaseya ransomware attack that happened that locked millions of individual devices. Huge issue was sent through Kaseya, which then they pushed to their clients in software updates and then locked everybody's shit. And Kaseya finally, after a couple weeks, now has the ability to decrypt the machines that have still been locked this entire time. All the companies have to do to get the decryption key from Kaseya is sign an NDA and agree to never talk about this again.
Yeah, like we said last week when the website went offline, like I think these dudes got a little too public and now they're starting to like figure out how they're not going to get caught for this shit and they're kind of scrambling.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, ultimately, whatever. These people are out in Russia somewhere. We've got no control. We've got no recourse to them. You know, all they're trying to do is just hide their, make sure that they don't, you know, do any Bitcoin transactions through an exchange
I'm assuming most Russian hackers that demand this kind of money, they're demanding it so that they don't have to live in Russia anymore. If that's your end goal, you kind of got to figure out how to not get caught when you go to a private beach in some other fucking country.
Maybe.
Like I can't imagine every Russian hacker's dream is to just be a millionaire in the fucking Siberia.
Well, I think you know that. Oh wait, we got one more story here that I skipped another update to things we've talked about last week and in previous weeks, and that's the right to repair. We talk about the fact that the executive order was written to grant right to repair in a very vague terms, but still a step forward towards creating some kind of legislation that protects consumers, allows us to have technicians or repair people outside of the companies that hold all the cards in these maintenance plans and warranties. And the FTC.
Yeah, I'm surprised this is still a topic of discussion in our government. Like usually it makes one headline and kind of just fizzles away and you never hear anything about it. The fact that this has been going on now for a couple of weeks, I don't know, man. They might actually be doing something.
Yeah, I mean, again, remember that the head of the FTC is a 30-year-old woman who is very tech-centered and hates big tech. So, you know, she's the head of the board over at FTC, and the FTC unanimously votes 5-0 to support the right to repair. So still vague, still no real like teeth to this yet to say how they're going to legislate it. But another step towards, and now you get, you know, the FTC in this ruling clearly coming out and talking about the fact that they're going to do every best effort to force compliance with all the big tech companies, forcing them into allowing for, you know, repair devices at third-party vendors and other access points, that they can't just lock everything behind, you know, some software and some kind of, you know, devalidating a warranty example.
Yeah, like we've been kind of like on the forefront of this just from having those discussions with Dr. O when he wrote that book Radicalized. This is because Radicalized was a 4-short story novel that we reviewed on the podcast and had Mr. Dr. O on the podcast to discuss. And one of his whole stories was right to repair. And, you know, it was more based off in the future when companies really started cranking down on what's starting to kind of happen now. So he saw the long game when it came to this. And it's refreshing to see that the government, or at least a person in the government, sees the writing on the wall and is willing to try to do something about it now before it gets so big that it's, you know, once companies get on a roll and do a lot of this shit, it's too big to contain. And once it gets implemented and the society kind of gets used to it, it's never going to come out. So while companies are starting to unroll this, you know, monopolistic kind of like behavior, it's good to see somebody getting on it right away.
Yeah. And then, I think that's it for general tech here. I think, you know, there's some big topics that we talk about, like wide sweeping topics in tech this week that hopefully people still care about and at least be in the know and then take advantage of opportunities to support organizations or sign petitions or do whatever the hell you can.
Yeah, that's the reason why we discuss these things in the cantina. We just want to start the conversation. We hope that we say enough to pique your interest and get you diving down the rabbit hole yourself and start to care about these things, because it's not just going to take a couple dickheads on a podcast to stop this. We're going to need a lot of signatures and people voting. So start to give a shit.
All right, but let's move into a pretty important space segment here this week.
Yeah, and pretty heavy on the space end.
It feels like it was a while ago already, but Jeff Bezos, he made it into orbit. And
he killed the family meme doing it. Like I'm pretty sure he single-handedly killed Dom in the fucking never-ending yeah. family meme with a giant phallic fucking spaceship.
So this is what kind of cracks me up, is Jeff Bezos is so hated that this just gets unanimously roasted across the internet for doing this. Like, there was no celebration for what he did. It was
no one really congratulated him. Like, yeah, it was
criticizing
all
him for not paying taxes. It was criticizing his carbon footprint from this program, which is actually not that high because of the fuels that they use.
Doesn't he kind of deserve it? Like, did you see the press conference where he thanked all the Amazon workers for funding his space trip? Like, that is the biggest douche move. You got
it's a little tone deaf. Like, how do you not have a PR person more capable than that?
You got massive stories that come out every week about drivers shitting in bags. People like the next step for Amazon is suicide nets on the side of the fucking warehouse. And this dude is thanking his employees for funding his $1 billion space venture. Like, out of touch fucking douche. You deserve every meme that ever got made.
Well, but I think what's actually unfair, I'll give him credit, is there were some cool stories that came out of this, in the sense that, like, yes, him and his brother went, right, and they had the auction seat.
The rest is sheer publicists. The rest was a boardroom of people saying, how can we make this dude less douchey? Okay, put the oldest woman astronaut in there with him. Put this... Yeah. I'm surprised he didn't go up carrying a puppy. Fuck you.
So the story behind the woman that went... Like, it's a great story.
It is. I get it. Like, I do get it. Don't act like Jeff Bezos gives a fuck.
I don't give a shit if he gives a fuck at all. Like, but in the end, like, the fact that was included, whether it was his idea or forced on him because, like, they told him, like, no, you can't bring your fucking girlfriend. I don't really care. But the very fact that, you know, Wally Funk, you know, one of the 13 women who competed to go to the NASA in the 1960s, trained in like this pilot program to get women. And in the end, in the 60s, NASA just said, no thanks to all of them, right? Like, just said, none of you are making it.
So
and
shitty.
It's such a shitty, like, time. And then for this, like, 82-year-old woman who is just still crushing it. Like, like, if you saw her at any press conferences, like, she is a healthy 82. But for her to actually be able to get up in space and to like be honored on her, what she did is trailblazing. Like, for NASA, like, it was actually a cool story that nobody talked about. Nobody. And I found that disappointing. You know, I don't really care about the fact that he also flew the youngest person to space, because, like, this youngest person had a $28 million seat. Like, so fuck this guy.
Yeah.
It's not like they brought, like, the youngest person, you know, who's some, like, space, you know, astrophysicist who graduated from college with his PhD at 18. No, he's just some rich-ass fucking kid who had his rich-ass dad buy him a seat. So, yeah, don't give a shit.
And that's what I mean, like... Of course, the woman astronaut got overshadowed by the sheer immense doucheness of the rocket itself.
The sheer immense dick, yeah. Like, the sheer immense penis that flew.
Like, you had two giant douches get into a dick-shaped rocket and get launched into suborbital, and they thought that shooting up the oldest female astronaut that was discriminated against for being a woman and all that was going to save them from the wretched, just fucking straight-up horrible fucking shit of just the complete... Like, the whole package, it was just a whole package of douche, wrapped in douche, smothered in douche. Like,
with an 82-year-old cherry on top. Yeah, like, that's what it was. But, yeah, like, I mean, I get it.
Like, I almost wish, like, right at the last second as she was about to get on the rocket, Elon just walked up and was like, hey, lady, don't get on there. I'll put you on the next one, and it won't, like, you don't have to go to space this way. Like, you know, like, this isn't how you want to go. Okay. I'll help you out. It'll be all right.
Yeah. This whole Bezos, like, week, it had to have been either this guy just doesn't, like, he's got, you know, don't give a fuck money. So maybe he really doesn't give a fuck, but I've got to think that this last, like, 2 weeks really just wounded him deep. Like, the fact that out of nowhere, Branson just decided, like, oh, when are you flying? All right, I'll beat you by 5 days. Like, I'm going up on an unscheduled flight. I'm going to go to space first. And then Bezos actually finally gets there in a, without any issues, you know, gets to his suborbital spot in space, and all he got was dick memes everywhere.
I don't think so.
People, like, in Congress talking about him not paying taxes.
Like, he pays people to write fake Amazon reviews and squash the bad Amazon reviews. So if he's willing to go that far just for his company, you don't think he has a whole team of people sheltering him from the internet and the just fucking lulls in attacks that he gets? Like, he's got to have a whole team around him at all time, just straight juggling balls and blocking internet memes. Like, that's all they do. So he lives in this sheltered bubble of mega yachts and fine dining and doing, you know, whatever he wants. And it's just nothing but yes men, yes men. And yeah. And he's got, like, probably the craziest meme firewall on his phones and computers, to where he doesn't see any of that shit.
All I know is I hope that he at least saw the great Dr. Evil memes of him, because he's 100% Dr. Evil.
100%.
Like,
he's 100%.
100%.
I don't understand how we didn't see that. We've been going Lex Luthor for a long time just because of the bald head and everything, and I never went Dr. Evil because that fits it so much. It fits him so much better that, you know, because, like, Lex actually, you know, has this kind of, like, you know, badass villain to him. There's not one ass of bad in that man.
Yeah.
What
we think about Bezos is that he actually has the potential to ruin the world, which,
oh, that's 100% true.
Never came close.
It's 100% true. It's 100% true.
So when you call him Dr. Evil, you're actually underscoring the actual damage to the world that he may one day do and is currently doing.
Yeah, I mean, but he definitely, even if he succeeded in that, it would be in some kind of, like, bumbling way, as we all just still make fun of him as we watch the world burn. Like, oh, we're all in breadlines. Yeah, but did you see that jagoff? Blah blah blah. Like, well, let's all be standing in breadlines, still ripping on this fucking dude.
Yeah. Well, we're not done with them either.
No.
You know, we got more stories, but, yeah, like, Elon, this isn't really much of a story, but Elon also joined in on Twitter laughing at Bezos and the fact that he didn't quite reach orbit, which that was never the plan, to reach orbit. Like, that's a whole different ballgame, but, but, like, Elon chiming in and joining Twitter about that. And then the greatest, again, these last 2 weeks have to be tough for Bezos. Because in like full on level 10 petty, you get NASA coming out and changing their definition of what an astronaut is just to make sure that Bezos and Branson don't make it in.
That, I think, is the best story of the week. Like Branson with his astronaut pin and how happy he was. And, you know, Bezos came down and said the same thing. And NASA was like, no, fuck you people. Like, just because you floated for a little bit doesn't make you an astronaut douchebag. I love it. I do. I really do love it.
It is the best. The only thing that sucks about that is fucking NASA got Wally Funk one more goddamn time. 82.
She can't catch a fucking break.
He got her one more fucking time.
I didn't even fucking think about that. What if they did it just for that reason, and Bezos and dude were just collateral damage, and they're just like, you think this bitch is gonna be an astronaut? We said no. We fucking mean no. That's so fucking horrible. Oh god, that poor lady. Someone shoot that lady into space. Jesus Christ.
So we put her in actual orbit. All right. And then
I did like all the Alan B. Shepard talk, just because we, for those that don't know, me and Ken both went to a high school named after Alan B. Shepard. And like, and surprisingly enough, I had a lot of alumni friends go, oh, so that's what he did?
Oh. Oh, that's interesting. Never heard of the guy.
Even though in our fucking gym we had a giant fucking astronaut mural and our goddamn school was named the Shepherd Astros, and I still had at least like three people on my Facebook page being like, oh, never knew that. Huh. You didn't look at a wall in the hallways, you fucking plebs? Like, what the fuck's wrong with you?
Yeah, well. We've got one more Bezos space story here, and that's that Bezos really he's fighting hard to compete for full Dr. Evil status, which would be a base on the moon. And in order for him to get that base on the moon, he needs to win this NASA contract. And he is now offering to pay up to $2 billion of like NASA mistakes and NASA overages and stuff like that, willing to cover that personally in order for Blue Origin to win the Moonlander contract.
Well, he's
going hard.
Well, he like called NASA giving SpaceX the contracts the mistake. Like, that is like the most arrogant fucking thing I think I've ever fucking heard. Like, hey, I'm gonna pay $2 billion.
And it's not the most arrogant thing. Like Musk would say that in a much less elegant way about if it went the other way around.
And like, after looking at this story and reading it, my first reaction was, where the fuck is celebrity deathmatch when you need it?
Oh yeah, we've talked about this. Yeah, we've talked about the need for a Bezos Musk celebrity deathmatch. That'd be phenomenal.
Like, bring it to Netflix. Like, bring it to what are you streaming services doing with your life? Yeah. Like,
and after this week, you know that the Elon Bezos celebrity deathmatch would have to end with Elon shooting a dick rocket up Bezos' ass and like out of the stadium.
Oh yeah, there's
that would have to be his death.
There are going to be too many dick references, like, and that's the thing is, like, you know, we're talking about space and we talk a lot about tech, and I know we joke around a lot, and it's just really hard to not turn into a fifth grader anytime we talk about space now with this dude shooting cocks into the fucking atmosphere. Like, I can't take it. Like,
I didn't read any of them, but I saw several different articles and attempts from like the Blue Origin like engineers explaining why it's shaped that way. Like, I didn't care to, like, I don't actually care. I don't need a physics lesson to know why, like, a penis is more aerodynamic than a regular cylinder. I don't care.
I would love for Musk to come out one day and just say, like, yeah, the most efficient way for me to make a rocket was to shape it like a dick, but I spent an extra $1 billion in 2 years avoiding that fucking thing for just this fucking reason.
Yeah. Yeah, to make it pointy. Like, he literally...
you know how long it took us to figure out how to not make the rocket look like a dick? I wasn't going to be that dude.
But yeah, so Bezos is still competing for this contract. He really wants it. He's offering to cover the first 2 years or $2 billion worth of cost and to ship a certain amount of the lunars without payment for NASA.
This is just such like a move of desperation. He's just so thirsty for outer space. It's not even funny.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, it still go back to the fact we've talked about it a lot. The fact that this is all good for NASA. This is all good for space exploration. This is all good for our inner child, you know, fascination for space. Is space tourism is a big part of the future. Space mining, space resources, like making space profitable it's necessary to progress these things forward. And Bezos is going to be a part of that, whether we like it or not. Like, he is going to be a part of that future.
Right now, NASA is the only chick left at the bar when the bar closes with these two drunk fucking dudes looking to take a girl home. And they're just going to do anything they can to try to take that girl home, man. And NASA's just going to reap all the benefits. Branson's
still just trying to party. Branson's still just trying to party. Like, he gives zero fucks about making it profitable. He's still just trying to party. So it's just Bezos.
He's humping a pinball machine in the corner, not giving a fuck.
Ultimately, we need Bezos. We need the competition. We need them pushing each other. And Bezos going for this contract aggressively. Like, listen, the guy's not the CEO of Amazon anymore. Like, this is what he does. Like, this is what he's got. His Blue Origin. This is where all his focus is. Because he's essentially semi-retired and just the chairman of Amazon and not in day-to-day operations anymore. So this is whatever. He's going to do whatever he can to give himself a new job running a space program.
Yeah, I know the commercialization of space can lead to some good things. It just doesn't sit right that our future hopes of space travel and innovative technology and everything that comes with it is really in the hands of these two men. Like, one is just a constant just joker that don't give a fuck and just builds anything he wants on a whim. Like, this dude has a space program, an electric car program, solar panel programs. He drills holes in the fucking earth. He makes flamethrowers on a fucking whim. Like, and this is the dude that we were leaving up our innovation to. And the other dude is just a maniacal fucking, attention grabbing piece of shit. I just don't have faith in the innovations that are going to come from this benefiting society as a whole. You know, when NASA first started the space program, a lot of good shit trickled down to the American people. We got Teflon pans from NASA. I use cordless drills at work every goddamn day. The cordless drill was invented to do work in outer space. Like, that's what it was made for. We would not have cordless fucking drills if it wasn't for the NASA space program. So to have that kind of future progression of technology that's going to affect consumers be resting on the shoulders of these two dudes, it doesn't give me a lot of faith.
Well, I guess I've just come to grips with the fact that it's the reality. Whether I have faith in it or not, it's the progression. Like, that's where we're heading. So let's see what comes about it. But let's end. We're here at the end of the show. We got one more story, and I'm happy to say it's just a quick fuck you, Steve.
Yeah, I know. I know. And I'm the one who sent you this article. I even asked for it. I'll eat my crow on this. It's okay.
Absolutely fascinating images coming from Hubble Telescope this week of three galaxies pulling and just having a cosmic tug of war battle. It's a phenomenal image, one of a kind, from our newly restored Hubble Telescope that Steve just wanted to just die and float around and never work again. So
I wanted to replace it. I didn't want to not discover space things anymore. I just didn't see the benefit of focusing on a fucking 50-year-old satellite that we should have probably replaced 30 years ago.
Well, now you see the benefit. So You lose.
Hubble's great. It'll function forever until this backup computer dies, and there's probably no more. There's probably not another backup. So,
like, can we at least admit that it's on its last legs? Like, we need a backup plan. Like, if we want to keep discovering these things, I get it. Like, good job, Hubble. I was a little hasty in my judgment of your abilities, but I mean, just because your dying dog caught the ball again once doesn't mean we shouldn't put him fucking down.
You don't put him down. You let him die a slow, miserable death. That's what you do.
You know, like, yeah, I don't want to stare at him laying on the floor with eye crust going down his fucking face and shitting all over the carpet. Like, no, bro, put that fucker out of his misery and get a new puppy. Like the rest of the goddamn world.
You really know how to ruin a good story. the worst analogy you could have come up with.
Did you just get that, like, Sarah McLachlan fucking picture of a dog in your head?
One of our listeners just recently put their dog down after
he's crying.
Long
he gonna cry. Oh, yeah. He gonna cry.
So, I'm sorry.
Man.
Well, on dead dogs shitting themselves and whatever. Let's wrap this one. Maybe we shouldn't ask for reviews or anything else this week. So we'll just say, come tell Steve about your opinions over at thenerdcantina.com/community. Join us over there. Good conversations, good memes, all the Dr. Evils and family memes and things that you could ever want, and probably more than you ever wanted, but that's okay. They're still great. Join us over there. Join the conversations. Celebrate nerd culture with fellow nerds.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
All right. With all that said, that's it. Talk to you next week, nerds.
See ya.